Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today, we're covering the after of the War of Armageddon, known affectionately as the Months of Shame.
As they should be.
Yeah. Again, read The Emperor's Gift, or at least the second half of it. If you're not overly interested in Grey Knights, at least read the second half of it. That's where a lot of the action that we're coming from today. We don't usually cover the book, but in this case, there's a pretty good source material.
Cover the action. I like your style there.
Yeah, just jump ahead. It's like, look, it's like a lot of movies, like the movie Commando. You can skip around in Commando and get a great experience and skip a lot of like, what was that purpose?
You're going to miss the plot.
Yeah, you might. I'm pretty sure a friend can sum it up for you in the case of Commando. Awesome film, by the way. But 40K Lorecast, weekly show in the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m., thank you, everybody, for commenting and following on the cast. It really does help us out quite a bit. We're pushing out further. We're now the number one lore cast in the world, which is cool as hell. So thank you. Thank you all for doing that.
The top of the chart, though. I want to be in the top of the chart.
We're not going to be the top of the chart.
I just want to at least try to beat Critical Role one time.
Really? Okay. Then how about you go and take acting lessons and become much better at this? And I'll do the same thing, and we'll see if we can do better than the people who are professional actors.
To be fair, yeah, you don't exactly. Know that I'm not a professional actor.
As someone who spent this much time with you, and the fact that you're...
Maybe this is all an act. I'm very healthy and ready to go. I'm also 6'4".
Yeah, you're doing, what's the De Niro style of acting? You've been doing that for 53 years.
I'm a method actor.
Yeah. Your Brad went too deep in the method acting, and now he's just lost. Doesn't know who he is anymore. His real name's Tim.
I can't be stopped.
With that, if you guys like this and you want to get some more of Brad and I, please check out our History of 40K podcast. It's also available on streaming platforms. Really great dive into the tabletop version of the game, going through first edition all the way through. We'll eventually get to 11th edition on it. Really fun time, though, we're having it. Want you guys to come in and check it out. Additionally, we have a YouTube channel, link in the show notes. There you'll find actually that History of 40K show because it has video. Ooh. Along with some old episodes of ours that we added some imagery to, our live Q&A sessions, and a few other things coming out. And if you also like video games, check out my other show that I cheat on Brad with called Retro Recall, where I'm covering older video games. Me and Tom from Robots Radio cover old video games. Again, available on YouTube called Retro Recall. Search engines work. Additionally, in the show notes, the link to our Patreon. Massive thank you for who's contributing to the Patreon. The Patreons, actually, you're going to see some pretty cool stuff in 2026. That's because of Patreon. We were able to reinvest some of the stuff and make some new shows. So I'm super excited about 2026, unless you're listening to this at the end of 2026 and they were all garbage, in which case, sorry, guys, we tried. But our Patreon, our Patreon.
Sorry, guys, we tried. That you are now considered the world's least motivational speaker.
Yeah. Tony Robbins and I are not quite aligned.
Whew.
All right. But if you want to support us for $4.99, you get this show and our History of 40K show ad-free, or 4,571.54 Chilean pesos. Despite the fact that you're not even in Chile, but still want to listen to us because you're 900 miles from Chile, in Argentina. And that's where Villa La Estrellas is located. Basically, you like penguins, is how I would sum this up. And you don't get seasick. And most importantly, you've never seen the movie The Thing. Because Villa La Estrellas is perfect. It's called the Hamlet of the Stars. But it's really a town of 14 houses with 80 people in it in the summer. In the winter, 15. But it's cool. This is random stuff you find. It's in the ice-free zone, which means, first off, there's a part of Antarctica that doesn't have ice on it. New thing I learned. And it has a giant airbase on it because it's the only place you can get in and out of because it's an ice-free zone. Pretty cool. And, of course, why would anyone go there? Well, simple, because you're going to test out HAB units for space travel, see what the effects of freezing temperatures are on things, lots of things. And I guess penguins? I don't know. It looks cool on paper. There is a 0% chance I'm going there because I get seasick and I don't like turbulence. And those are the two ways you get there. And I already live somewhere cold, so I'm good. But if you go there, please put photos up on our Discord. I think it'd be fascinating to see more about, wow, you live somewhere cold. Anyway.
You live somewhere cold. Okay.
Yeah. Speaking of Discord, though. Big, as always, invite everyone in to join our Discord. It's an amazing place that's been really popping off recently, mostly of people yelling at me about Terminator 2. I'm staying on this hill till I die.
It's not even
John
a hill.
John Connor's so bad. He's so bad in that movie. The rest of the movie's good. So bad.
Liquid metal.
That part's cool. The whole thing with the T-1000 is cool. This maybe Arnold's one of his best films, but the rest of them, not so much. The rest of them could have starred in, I don't know, Encino Man for that level of acting. But let's talk about the Discord. Our Discord's a super great place. We have tons of communities in there from literature recommendations, gaming, tabletop play, even just memes, artwork, whatever, painting competitions. Really fantastic spot. Come on in, join it, interact with everybody else. I haven't thanked the mods in a while, so let's do it again real quick. Doc, Ars, Toba, Tyrant, Hair, Zemsta, Jay, Solarzia, Cthulhu, Query, Maestro, Steve, Gers, Noogles, Awargamon, Twin, Curl, Slanesh, and Silva. I have to have the list in front of me, obviously. Big thank you to all of them.
You didn't do that from straight from memory?
No.
Wuss.
No, I'll get three of them right. Tops. But really big thank you to that moderation team. They're ones who made it organized. If you guys haven't joined our Discord and you're in other Discords, at least come take a look at it. Look at the work they did. If nothing else, come in to see how well organized this thing is. They did an incredible job of making it easy to navigate, easy to move through, easy to ask questions. Really big thank you to them for doing it. But with that, on to the cast. So let's start off with where we are. The First War of Armageddon has now concluded. Angron and the forces of Khorne have been repelled. They're banished by the Grey Knights, but also thanks to a rather Herculean effort by the Space Wolves. Yeah, and humans.
Say hold, please, sir, because the human defenders of Armageddon were heroes of the Imperium, to quote Logan Grimnar. Yeah, I just quoted a fictional character. Thank you very much. Did.
Also, I'm not saying that they're not, but in reading the books, I don't know of a lot of stories of what they did other than not die.
Look, if you don't instantly run away as a bloodthirster smoke showing you.
It's just the next couple Wars of Armageddon, the humans do epic stuff. That's all I'm saying. In this one of War of Armageddon, their epic was Logan said they did a good job. And I believe.
The thing is that they did hold the line for a while
with Space Wolves next to them. I'm not saying they didn't. I'm just, I'm more calling out GW and that, hey, we could get more on this war, because in other wars, you hear like tales of real heroism from them. And this one, it was like they counterattacked. The Space Wolves were also there. And then don't get me wrong. If you've never seen a bloodthirster ever and you're holding a las rifle and you don't just run away, hero or stupid, pick one.
Or both.
It really is. All right.
Hero.
As the Space Wolves, the Defense Force, and the Grey Knights were getting slaughtered on Armageddon, defeating Angron, the Inquisition was up in space watching.
Doing what it usually does.
Yeah. Plotting. Yeah. The Inquisition decided that the events of the Armageddon were too extreme. Even though a lot of the people there were either oblivious to the events or heroes in defense against them, the risk of the spread of heresy was too great, because a single citizen telling the stories of what happened there could be like a drop of snow that caused an avalanche. That's how the Inquisition views it.
And this is so much different in modern. This is still modern 40K, but like it has changed quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, this is M40. This is still M41.
It's M41, yeah. I'm just saying that it changes quite a bit once you have the rift and people go, hey, man, what the hell?
Like, demons are coming buying groceries at your store. Is there that common now? Like, whoa, man, this stuff kind of changed, guys. The other problem that the Inquisition has, though, is that this planet is of too high value. Usually in this type of scenario, you have a chaos demon attack. After the invasion, they would just purify the whole planet, just full exterminatus, wipe it out of
existence. It is 80s action movie. You walk away from a burning building, from the explosion, like nothing happened.
Yeah. Every single time. And so what happens in this situation, though, is Armageddon is too valuable. It's this massive manufacturing hub, so they can't just blow it up. So the Inquisition then divides the survivors into two categories. The civilians who were within the hives, who saw nothing, know nothing, and the soldiers on the battlefront. And one of that know nothing, saw nothing thing, I want to dive into a little bit. The fighting didn't occur within the hives. Inside the hives was just, you know, yeah, they were cultists, but
I was saying we had some cultist revolutions popping up.
But there's no demons, there's no demon kin. So they didn't see that. Logan, when he got there, actually sealed all the hives too, to make sure they couldn't see that there's not really good windows on hives, but the idea was nothing went into the hives and nothing came out of the hives. So anyone inside the hive was just kind of, they might not even know there was a war going on, in all fairness. But nonetheless, the Inquisition decides, nope.
I love that their solutions are always so awful.
It's so overboard. I mean, so yeah, because the part one of it may be fine, but part two is gross. So the Inquisition decides the best solution is to just sterilize the entire population. So they can't, that way the story dies with them. But that still takes a while. So then they send them all to labor camps, like forced labor camps, like they'd done something wrong and they were going to do forced labor until they die.
Yeah. They just, why? You guys are just dicks.
My thinking of it is because if you let the population die out, your labor force becomes kind of unreliable because it's, hey, this hive's down 30%. Can they keep producing? So their idea was, we'll just take everyone out of all the hives and bring in new colonists, and we'll take the old colonists and we'll go put them on what is in effect a penitent crusade, despite them doing nothing.
I mean, at that point in time, just shoot me in the head, dude. Like, you're like, think, hey, what are you doing today? Every day I wake up, Steve punches me in the face. I break heavy rocks and then they beat me with a stick at the end of the day. You're like, why? I don't know.
Yeah, no one's told me. But that's just the citizens. The soldiers were a lot darker. For the idea to deal with all these soldiers, and these are the ones who did see chaos, obviously, was the Grey Knights were just going to mass murder them. All of the soldiers are going to be rounded up and shipped off to, heavy air quotes here, the next engagement. Because they are pretty solid veterans now, guys. But that was a cover story. The plan was, as soon as they went to leave and translate into the warp, the Grey Knight's ship would attack them and blow them up in space. So they're sterilizing the one population to work, to be in labor camps. But those people never saw chaos. There's no chance of them falling to chaos. They might actually work in that labor camp without worshiping demons. But the soldiers, they figured they're all going to start worshiping demons like tomorrow. So we're going to kill them all.
You know what? I'm going to give you a bad movie that I'm referencing. They treated all the soldiers like they were from the island. You've won the lottery. Yes.
God damn it. All right. Both of these plans were not well received by the Space Wolves. Actually, or even the Grey Knights, if I'm being honest. And that's a cool part of the story. The Space Wolves, really not okay with it. But even the Grey Knights were asking a question of like, hey, we rushed here to fight Angron to save the planet. If we're just going to kill everyone anyway, why didn't we just wait, I don't know, a week? And we would have had more Grey Knights.
All of the Grey Knights would have gotten here as opposed to Ted showing up going, just go down there? Oh, I guess.
We fought one of the most powerful demon princes of chaos in existence with 109 dudes. We could have waited a week and it would have been like 1,000. Feels like maybe we should have done the 1,000 thing if we weren't trying to save the populace. Now, the Grey Knights felt that way, weren't going to do anything about it. You know who was?
Logan Grimnar and the Space Wolves ain't going out like that.
So we're going to jump over now to another character who gets introduced. He's around earlier, but he becomes very important. I'm going to go with Cisneros is how I'm going to pronounce it, because GW just wants my life to be hard when they write these names. All right. So the Inquisition had a number of members present at Armageddon, and the decision to kill off all non-Astartes who saw it was decided by a vote. There was a senior leader, though, and that's Inquisitor Lord, we're good with Ghesmi, Ghesmei, Kensai. Who cares?
I love everything about this.
Yeah. Cisneros. Interesting about Cisneros, he's an independent Inquisition member. He's not part of any Ordo, not Ordo Malleus, not Ordo Xenos, none of the Ordos, which matters a little bit. And his origins are largely unknown. They hint his age is somewhere around 400 years. So he's been doing this for a bit, or maybe that's at least how long he served with in the Inquisition. He's described to be like the laziest written villain ever, because he's got long flowing blonde hair and he's got these perfect features, because he's meant to be this person who's like, it's just the he's meant to be a person you want to punch in the face the second you see them and they start speaking. He's
the bad frat guy in a movie.
Yeah.
I know the guy. I didn't think of him as the frat guy, but I get you on that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Backwards baseball cap, the whole thing. He sucks. So you take one look at him and go, oh, not even in the movie, he's like the opening scene of a TV show, the leader of the bullies. That's what he's described effectively as. So thing about Cisneros is he's absolute in his convictions. He's not a genius, but he's not dull. And he believes that his course of action is the right one and is not willing to divert once he's made his decision. But he's also not the only member of the Inquisition there. The other one does matter is Annika, which is spelled wrong. Jarl's daughter. Ooh, get it? Jarl's daughter? Yeah, that one was phonetic. That's why they wrote it that way. Because she's originally from Fenris. She's going to matter a bit more later. She's a member of the Ordo Malleus. She's an Inquisitor. She's basically the protagonist to Cisneros' antagonist. And she's very close with some of the Grey Knights. But the problem for her is she's this character who has no real power whatsoever.
And he's comically a douche to her, but continue.
Well, he's to everybody. That's the whole thing.
True,
the
true.
The problem with Inquisitors is, and this does matter, I don't think, honestly, I'll have to put this in the notes. So let's talk about this real quick. Inquisitors can kill other Inquisitors. They know that. And when you're an Inquisitor, you really have to be careful about, you know, griping too hard at somebody, because they can just call you a heretic and murder you. And that's kind of the end of it. So you have to be careful as an Inquisitor. That's why there's a lot of subterfuge with Inquisitors. Unlike with Logan Grimnar, not a lot of subterfuge.
No.
Well, actually, he's clever. This story gets really cool.
I would have to say he's cunning, but brutal.
Yes, very much so. Look, yeah, we can call it out. Space wolves are orcs. Just move on with that. Move on with your day. The writing's not that. When you read an orc novel and you read a space wolf novel, there's overlap. Let's get into the opening of the hostilities. Jarl Grimnar reached out to the Inquisition forces once the processing of the citizens of Armageddon began. He politely informed them. It was politely. It was snarling, but it was politely that he accepted there was nothing he could do for the population being sterilized, but he wasn't okay with what they're doing with the soldiers. And his viewpoint was anyone who fought against the forces of Angron are heroes of the Imperium and would be treated as such. The Inquisition of the Grey Knights both knew Grimnar is a little bit of a loony, but they had no idea how far he would go. This created some tension for them. What does he mean by this? Because there was no open threat from him. It just was I'm not going to let you do that.
So this is one of those where I feel like they didn't understand who they were talking to.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious. Quick.
Yeah. I feel like maybe we have a bad connection. I said,
I'm not letting this happen.
Yeah.
But Inquisition says, yeah, whatever. And the process begins. And the first transport takes off, loaded up with these veterans. And it's being escorted out to its jump point by a Space Wolf cruiser. It's a single cruiser, but also a Grey Knight cruiser. And it's the one that a Hyperion, who we discussed last cast, this is a cruiser he's on. Even though the Space Wolf cruiser is pretty close, it's not that close. And Hyperion's able to shoot on it. They use a Lance battery, destroying it, killing everyone on board. Now, what's important here is didn't hit the Space Wolf thing. And the Space Wolves basically replied back with, okay, so you are willing to do this, for lack of a better phrase. It was their question was simply, do you have the balls to follow through with this? And the Grey Knights said, yeah, of course we do. So the Space Wolves went, okay, on to plan B. Important note here. On the ground, the Inquisition massively outnumber the Space Wolves. They've got a giant force there. But for whatever reason, in space, they didn't. So Grimnar can't really do anything on the planet Armageddon. But in space, they've got more ships and actually heavier ships too. So if a naval battle were to commence, the Space Wolves would win it handedly, but they both take losses. This was the fear the Grey Knights and the Inquisition had, was if the Space Wolves attack, we're all going to die, simply put. But, and we're yet another Badab War level civil. Logan does two things. The first thing he does is he makes up some excuse and organizes all of the transport ships to leave at once. Kind of like episode four, whatever it is, where the
Empire Strikes Back?
Yeah. Where the ion cannon can only protect so many at once.
Yeah. And it would be episode five. Thank you very much.
Five. Thank you.
Five.
I do like, I'm playing Lego Star Wars with my kid right now. That's but so he does, he says, all right, all the ships, we're all going to leave at once because there's a warp storm coming or whatever it is. So every single troop transport takes off at once. And then Logan decides this time we're not going to follow close behind.
We're on top of you. They're on your six. Mm-hmm. Also, the ships look like Top Gun maneuvers as they're moving out.
Yes. Yeah, as the transports are moving in a big ball, all the Space Wolf vehicles around them are constantly changing direction randomly. And they're doing this so that no one can get an actual line of sight without hitting a Space Wolf vehicle. And the Inquisition send the Grey Knights to follow in, and you get this kind of standoff because they cannot get a firing solution without hitting a Grey Knights. And eventually, there's a new grandmaster named Yoros of the Grey Knights, and he makes a vox call to Grimnar. And Yoros is not long for this world, spoiler alert, but Yoros tells Grimnar, okay, you made your point. Now get out of the way because we have to do something.
That's way nicer than how he said it, but continue. Yeah.
And Grimnar replies back with just, what point? It's effectively, is like, what point? This is what we're doing. So now Cisneros has to take over, and he orders the fleet to attack the Space Wolf fleet, which is a declaration of war in effect. And it's this kind of funny thing happens. The Grey Knight vessels are like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, fire on them. And so all the Grey Knight vessels go, all right, where's the heaviest shields in the Space Wolf ship? Can we just shoot at that at low power? Because I really don't want to have a big naval conflict. And this begins happening. They start basically firing at the Space Wolf ships. And the Space Wolves, their aft shields will go down. And so the ship will just turn to put the starboard shields at you.
It was a weird sparring thing. This was so strange to me in the books because I didn't know what they were trying to accomplish. And it does continue until Cisneros loses his mind out of nowhere, too. He's just like, this is bullshit. And decides to rage out.
And this bit's hilarious because what Cisneros does is says, all right, destroy them now. They're screaming like the professional style. Get them, kill them now. And so they go. The Grey Knight fleet starts going into pursuit. They begin actually shooting much more heavily at the Space Wolf ships, potentially destroying some of them until there's a really big flash in front of everybody. And the battle farge, Yalfarheim, we'll go with Yalfarheim, translates in along with all of its escorts. Effectively, the Space Wolves brought their fleet and they translated in between the Space Wolves and escort and the Grey Knight fleet pursuing them. At which point, Cisneros does have to kind of go, okay.
Let's also set this up because I think we glossed over the fact that another battle barge. Marines travel in monstrosity warships because they have to bring so much stuff with them in the first place for their traveling war. And they battle barges are, holy crap, they're just
astronomically large. And also, I should mention one thing I didn't mention earlier. Now, I'm sorry, everybody. The key part of this is the Space Wolves were never firing back. No matter how many times the Grey Knight vessels, and I guess Inquisitor vessels, shot at the Space Wolf vessels, they never returned fire. And so when this battle barge translates in front of them, this becomes a nice little warning sign up. And this thing could have just, by the way, translated in and wiped out the entire fleet almost by itself. But it just translates in and says, hey, do you want to shoot at this too?
I do love this fact because this is like the guy that's trying to talk a lot of crap in front of the bar, and then the big guy shows up and just goes, come on, man. And they go, man, if I wanted to, I'd beat you up. I'm not going to right now, but if I wanted to, I would. It's and like they those yeah
it's in the videos of Road Rage where someone's banging on someone's door and the door opens and like 7 feet gets out and the person banging on it just go like, never mind. Like, the light screen, gotta go.
So weirdly enough, the Inquisition force backs up.
Yeah. Now, Cisneros and the Grey Knights do not take this L well. They're very much on team, won the battle, but you're going to lose the war to the Space Wolves. And unfortunately, Logan Grimnar's intentions here were good. The results of it are pretty bad, because instead of a few million soldiers dying, trillions now die as a result of this. Because the troop transports successfully leave the system, but the Inquisition had ID'd all of them. They knew every ship. They know, and the Imperium is not, this isn't sailing across the Pacific in 1643. You know what I mean? Like, they can track stuff.
But he did a Firefly on this where they put out 52 fake trackers also, because he spreads them to the full.
Yeah. Grimnar's idea is that these are heroes and they deserve not only to survive, but to have offspring and do all these things. So I'm going to scatter them to the wind. The issue is that as the troops drop off and spread, and they spread out more and more, the Inquisition views it as like an infection spreading, like putting spider webs everywhere. And it felt like to them that Grimnar was daring the Inquisition just to kill trillions in an effort to.
I don't think it was daring, though. I really do think that Grimnar thought that, look, man, you'll see it's ridiculous, you know, to do this. Just don't. It would have to be so colossally ridiculous for you to do this that there's no way that you're going to do this.
Yep. And so that's exactly what Cisneros does. So the Inquisition, I mean, like, we're not missing a beat, by the way. The Inquisition begins tracking movement of every ship, and they start deploying Grey Knight fleets along the way to kind of stop them, but more importantly, to just kill anything that interacted with them. For example, like a relay spot. When we talk about space travel, merchant fleets, they don't have navigators, so they do short jumps. And so they jump into the warp and they jump out of the warp. And when they come out of the warp, they basically ping. And it's usually one of these relay stations. Here's our ID. Here's where we're going. What direction do we go? Relay station says, go that way. All right. And then they'll translate back into the warp. And that's they hop their way through the warp. The thing is that when they do that, relay station now gets a record of their existence. So the Inquisition starts destroying these relay stations.
I mean, this was so bananas, by the way. This guy is such an idiot. He's one of my least favorites.
Yeah, I mean, he never made it all the way to Lord of Terra, but...
No. No, because this guy's in doing what he's doing, which is already too much. He starts weakening the Imperium because he's actually killing these beacons, for instance, horribly hurts people that are bringing goods, services to the Imperium. You remember, the Imperium is a war economy, period. 90% of everything that's happening is to further the war efforts. You know, so this guy is actually making the Imperium weaker by doing what he's doing.
What ends up happening is the Inquisition comes through and they're blowing up this relay station because the relay station has a record of a ship that they don't want anyone to know ever existed. But there's other ships, thousands, tens of thousands of ships that are going to translate out of the warp to ping that relay station. That's now not there. So now they have to find another relay station to ping. And he's in effect slowing down the entirety of the Imperium to achieve his thing, which, to Brad's point earlier, Grimnar was like, yeah, man, like, you're not going to go this far, are you? Well, he goes further than that, because he also starts exterminatising worlds that the survivors land on.
He did not listen to Robert Downey Jr.
No, he did not. Yeah. So Grimnar doesn't really care for this. So Grimnar begins at first increasing the amount of escorts on the ships. His idea was, all right, well, I'll make it even harder to kill these ships, and we're going to spread them even farther and wider. And the idea is to put the Inquisition on pace to become the greatest threat to the entire Imperial citizenry that exists in the galaxy, because they're so spread out. There's so much stuff everywhere, and engaging with them is so hard. It has to be so violent. They'll never do it.
Okay. This is when things go. We jumped a plaid. This is so dumb. This is intergalactically dumb. Castellanos goes, hey, man, he's making it real hard for me to be an idiot. This stuff is getting to the point where it's super inconvenient for me to murder and exterminate entire planets. Mm-hmm. I can't do some of these planets because they're too valuable. So he decides, hey, man, Logan, you should meet up. We got to hash this out.
We'll be right back after a quick break. I can tell you all from experience that starting something new isn't just hard, it's terrifying. You put in a ton of effort and time, and the whole time wonder, is anyone actually going to like this or care? When we started the 40K Lorecast, it was super overwhelming. And when you're starting off something new, it always seems like that, that your to-do list just keeps on growing. Finding the right tool that not only helps you out, but also simplifies everything can be a game changer. And for millions of businesses, that tool is Shopify. With Shopify, starting your own business is easy. Shopify can help you with things like getting started with your own design studio. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, Shopify helps you build and create online stores that match your brand style. Getting the word out like you have a marketing team behind you. Easily creating email and social media campaigns wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling. One of the better pieces to me is, what if you get stuck? Shopify's always around to share advice with their award-winning 24/7 customer support. It can also help you tackle a lot of the important tasks all in one place, from inventory to payments to analytics and more. No need to use multiple websites to try and figure out what platform is hosting the tool that you need. Everything's in one place, making your life easier and your business operations a lot smoother. Start your business today with the industry's best business partner, Shopify, and start hearing. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/lore. Go to shopify.com/lore. That's shopify.com/lore. February is full of flowers, candy, stuffed animals, and lots of talk of relationships and dating. And no matter your situation, married, dating, single, or just choosing to focus on you, therapy can help you find a way to see more clearly. We're all still working to figure ourselves out, and sometimes it's really helpful to get some outside assistance to take the pressure off from trying to figure it out alone. I know for me, therapy's aided me through some challenging eras of my life. Being able to talk through what I'm feeling and where I'm struggling allowed me to better cope and help myself at making my life better for me and those around me. With BetterHelp, you can be matched with quality therapists with care and reliability. BetterHelp does the initial matching for you, helping you find the right therapist for your needs, while at the same time providing flexibility to change amongst their over 30,000 therapists at any time. BetterHelp is one of the largest online therapy platforms, having served over 5 million people globally. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with qualified therapists. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com.
And so he sends a coded communication to Grimnar asking to meet and discuss and for a parley between the two leaders. Grimnar agreed, and Kisnaros began the F around and find out phase of this story. But before was F around. What he does next is an extreme. So they agreed to meet in the Harrakhan system. Now, Kisnaros and Grandmaster Yoros had a separate plan. What they really decided was the best way to end hostilities between the Inquisition and the Space Wolves. Because remember, the Space Wolves are a first founding chapter. we are on the verge of a civil war between them and the Inquisition. Even Cisneros is nervous about how that's going to play out for him. It is possible and also Yoros knows the same thing. It's entirely possible the Lords of Terror would say, yeah, why are you at war with one of the most important factions and the ones who actually fought next to the Emperor again?
That also haven't even remotely Codex compliant it up. But
there's also that.
They have a ton of stuff. This plan is so bad.
This plan is really good if it's not a Space Marine chapter you're trying to do it, let alone Space Wolves. So their plan is we're going to capture Grimnar, and then that will pacify everyone because we'll have their chapter master, and from then we can get them to do whatever we want, which is not the best idea. If we're gonna rank it on 1 to 10, this is a negative 80.
I'm trying to think of who's in the room as they're pitching this on the whiteboard, and they're like, all right, and this equals this, and as soon as we capture them, they will just everybody will cow down and not do anything. You're like, no, the exact opposite will happen. They will come try to get Grimnar. I would have got the spray bottle out. Get off there.
So Grimnar doesn't know this, so he honors the code of parley. He and his entire fleet translate in.
Hold on to this, because this is one of my favorites, because I've had people go, you know, Grimnar fell into this thing. I go, yeah, man, because this is so Roadrunner Coyote, such a bad plan that it's like this would never happen.
No one would ever think to do this. So yeah, Grimnar, entire fleet translate in, shields down, weapons down, and immediately get fired upon. The four escort vehicles are on Grimnar's vessel, called the Scaramasiax, are destroyed at 100% casualty. The Inquisition vessels then begin firing on the Scaramasiax and disable it, basically shutting down its engines, or not all the way, because we'll get to that in a second, but it's bad. And Cisneros then demands that Grimnar halt all of his actions and come aboard his vessel to discuss terms.
Oh, God. This is one of my favorite things in all of the books. Grimnar just goes, yeah, I'll be there in a second.
Yeah, hold I'm on my way. Yeah.
I just bought fresh new boots of mighty ass kicking. I'm going to slap those on. It'll take me a second.
Ugh. So Grimnar and his wolf guard teleport aboard the Inquisition vessel, and Cisneros is convinced that he's bested Grimnar, and he's bringing his defeated commander on board his ship to surrender. So and this is what Cisneros does a lot. He loves to monologue at people, not bad guy monologue, but just like, yeah, everything I know is correct, so I'm just going to give you a lecture now.
And this is 100% a bad guy monologue.
Yeah, but he's not. But the bad, when we say bad guy monologue, that's usually where you do all this confession of, and this is what I'm going to do after this.
Yeah, true. He's just talking shit.
Basically. He's just being an idiot. Yeah. So he informs Grimnar the whole war was silly, that this was a mistake, but don't worry. The Inquisition are willing to forgive the Space Wolves. Their entire chapter just has to go complete a penitent crusade and afterwards redeclare their loyalty to the Imperium. And he keeps going with this whole thing, blah, 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 all this stuff. And after a lot of this long speech, Grimnar just goes, yeah, who ordered the shooting on my vessels? That's over again. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he completely is ignoring it. He's like, yeah, all I want to know, who gave the order? To which Yoros goes, hey, I don't know if he was trying to be the tough guy or what happened there, but Yoros says it's actually you gave the order. And Grimnar went, nah. Grimnar decides, and he had a problem with that. He's taking offense. Grimnar moves at lightning speed. And before Yoros even knows he's getting attacked effectively, he cuts him in half with his power
axe. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just went, well, that's settled, and kind of meme mugs everybody for a minute with big guys in one line, little guys in another, if you guys want to deal with this.
And I love it. And so Cisneros starts yelling. Obviously, the Grey Knights are about to murder or for this. And Cisneros steps in and says, no, everyone stop. And so it's like talking to Grimnar, talking down to him, of course, despite it being very much so an up angle, telling him, look, there's no reason for this. All you have to do is have your whole chapter go on a penitent crusade. And then don't worry about it. All will be forgiven, blah, blah, blah. Grimnar is not really feeling it. And what I well, like happened.
Let's say what it is. Tell him what he did. He's going, hey, not only have I said you're untrustworthy, you might be heretics. I've bested you, which is another one. Yeah. All you have to do is convince your entire legion to go. It's still a legion to go on a suicide mission and declare that you're heretics and you could redeem yourself. And he just went, yeah,
no. That's not going to happen. I believe he says, in effect, go piss up a rope. And Grimnar and his Wolfguard go to teleport back to their ship. But, and I didn't know this, teleportation uses the warp. Who knew? So the Grey Knights are actually able to hold them in place. The Grey Knights knew they'd try and leave. So as Grimnar tries to teleport back to his ship, the Grey Knights put up a barrier and they stop it. All proud of themselves for a moment.
Then Grimnar's Wolfguard decide, oh, you just tried to capture the chapter master. Nope. And proceed to just cut down four Justicars.
Yeah.
Breaking the containment.
Yeah. Which breaks the containment. And then they all jump back to the Scramasex. Now, what I will say is the Grenades could have destroyed the Scramasex right here. This thing is already disabled. They've got a fleet, nothing there. But Kisnaros just says, whatever, let him go. And I think it's because he knows if he killed Grimnar in cold blood, this becomes a full-blown civil war. So he has to now have a better plan. Spoiler alert, he has a better plan than killing Grimnar in cold blood, but it's not a good plan. So
all of his plans are comically terrible.
Yeah. Now, we've now entered what becomes the open war phase of this. Grimnar is on to plan D now, I think.
Well, and Grimnar just went, yeah, I'm not even pretending to be cool guy anymore.
Yeah.
I noticed that on today's agenda, it's beat the crap out of the Grey Knights, the Inquisition.
Yeah. And so what happens is over the next month or so, Grey Knight vessels start disappearing all around the galaxy. They're the vessels who are pursuing the veterans of Armageddon. The ships just disappear. And not a really big surprise when they went and looked for them, what they found, just void damage where they'd been completely suddenly attacked and a little bit of psionic testing. They discover, oh yeah, the Space Wolves did it. So we now have a full-blown civil war. It's a shadow civil war, but it's a full-blown civil war. And the issue is size. The Inquisition and their total troops and vessels.
Well, it's galactic-wide.
Yeah, I mean, are much larger than the Space Wolves. But the Space Wolves massively outnumber the Grey Knights. And without the Grey Knights, the Inquisition lose one of their most vital parts.
Also, the Grey Knights are being used for such ridiculous. You basically had special forces enforcing no jaywalking right now.
Yeah.
This is how small this is compared to what they should be doing.
Yeah. And so at around the same time, Kisnaros brought in the Red Hunters. The Red Hunters are another Stardust chapter, like the Minotaurs, but they're aligned to the Inquisition, but they're not Grey Knights. They don't have the Emperor's gene seed. So the Red Hunters are weird.
Super weird.
They're known as the only chapter to openly worship the Emperor like a god. So they're effectively the word bearers from 30K. But their purpose is more to be the minions of the Inquisition, and whereas the Grey Knights are meant to fight the archenemy. The problem is that the Space Wolves are targeting both of them. So you've got a war right now. In all candor, if the Space Wolves wiped out the Red Hunters, they can make more of them. You know, it's not that big of a deal. But the Space Wolves wipe out or significantly decrease in the amount of Grey Knights. Now the Imperium's actually in danger because they don't have a force that can handle demonic incursions. So this war is about to get a real big problem. And my opinion is that Kisnaros knew this. Because my opinion is that each step of the way here, Kisnaros kept convincing himself that what he was about to do was going to be successful. And then when it wasn't, went, okay, but this next thing will be. And it's all to kind of cover up from the mistakes of the first one. Kisnaros decides, after about 8 months of campaigning, he decides, all right, I give up, in effect, saying, we cannot hunt down these survivors of Armageddon. It's impossible. We'll never get there. He can't, at the same time, label the Space Wolves as traitors or heretics. He just can't by himself. Well, he can't by himself. He needs them to label themselves as heretics. And this is where I'm saying he's at that point now. He has to stop hunting down and killing random worlds because the attention's going to come to him on that.
This guy is just will not cut his losses in his epic bet. He keeps doubling down. He's chasing a bad bet.
That's one thing. And that's the best analogy possible. He's chasing a bad bet because the flip side is same with the Space Wolves. He's now engaged the Space Wolves. He tried to kill the chapter master of the Space Wolves. He needs the Space Wolves to be heretics. And the only way to do that is get the Space Wolves to convince everybody else that they're heretics by saying they're heretics. So he has a new, really good plan that does not go very well. All right. This is actually one of the best parts of that whole book, one of my favorite parts of the whole story. So let's get into this. Cisneros calls all the Grey Knights, all the Red Hunters, and a bunch of the Inquisition to a meeting point. And when they'll get to this meeting point, he reveals his master plan, which is, the war for the souls of Armageddon is lost, but it's not his fault. It's because of the betrayal of the Space Wolves. And this once noble chapter has fallen and needs to be brought back in line. And his viewpoint is Logan Grimnar wouldn't listen to reason, but someone else in the chapter probably would. So we're going to go to Fenris and we're going to surround it and we're going to bomb it. And which is, by the way, the Space Wolves chapter monastery and one of the most important parts of the entire galaxy for them outside of Holy Terra.
This is, wow. Yeah. Never go. Come on now.
Yes. And his entire idea is that, well, they will then submit to the Inquisition and take their punishment because they wouldn't want their homeworld to be destroyed.
Yeah. And I took offense to that.
Yeah. Now, this whole thing is going to work because Grimnar and 95% of his fleet are out hunting the Inquisition. So they're not going to be on Fenris. So there's really no defensive forces there. And he's correct. When they arrive on Fenris, there was nothing there. There was a single damaged cruiser. It docked at the Fang getting repaired. Now, the Fang is not undefended, by the way. It's a lot of Space Wolves are there.
Well, the Fortress Monastery has... It's called a fortress monastery for a reason.
And it dates back to 10,000 plus years when the Imperium could really build stuff. So this thing can actually take quite a pounding. It was made for one of the Emperor's favorite legions to make sure it was safe. So it was done by the best of the Mechanicum, not some of the stuff that's built in more modern 40K. But Cisneros and the fleet quickly surround and begin bombarding Fenris and the Fang. And he demands a parlay with the Space Wolves to discuss terms. And this whole part's epically funny, by the way, in the book, in a good way. Grimnar's out of the galaxy, so he asks for the highest ranking member of the Space Wolves to negotiate with him, to which the person on the other side of the phone goes, "There is someone, but give us 4 hours to get him." And Cisneros doesn't read into that at all, and he's just super excited about it, and starts making up his delegation party to go down there and get his surrender.
Yeah, he's like high-fiving himself, thinking about how awesome he is for having this happen.
Yeah, and so what he does is, but he wants to come off as diplomatic. So he brings himself, obviously, and then he brings Hyperion. Hyperion, we talked a lot in the last cast.
I think you meant to say Blade Breaker.
Exactly. The Space Wolves know him as Blade Breaker because he broke Angron's blade. This is a heroic tale that has spread the entire galaxy. Every Space Wolf basically knows the tale of Blade Breaker. And he brings Annika Jarl's daughter as well because she was born on Fenris and has a strong attachment to the world. In his idea, he's trying to show authority, but also compassion. Look, I don't want to wipe you out. I believe that you are a noble chapter. You just have to take your punishment. And then everything will be okay. They're hanging out on this dock. It's a mid-space dock.
I love the fact that they said, we're going to send our representative, but we need a little while, because they had to wake him because their representative, they went, shit's going down. What do we do when shit goes down? Well, we wake up Bjorn the Fell-Handed and he shows up. Oh, to go again. Bjorn's a venerable dreadnought. He's been around for and he's also he's also the calmest dreadnought ever, by the way. He consistently talks people into stuff. I feel like I would be able to calm people down and win arguments too if I was a giant monstrosity of a dreadnought. Oh, whoa.
No, you won't. Yeah, so This scene is epic, by the way, because the Dreadnought walks in. Immediately, Annika recognizes it, begins crying because she can't believe that it's a real thing. Hyperion starts reading the side of the sarcophagi, realizes who it is, and drops to a knee as well. Meanwhile, Caisneros is just having a lecture and talking and talking and talking, and has this moment of, wait, why is everyone around me kneeling in front of this Dreadnought? Oh, he has a great line where he says, I've given you my name. You haven't given me yours. You know, we can't parley till you tell me your name. To which Bjorn goes, it's written on the side of me. And Hyperion has to translate, telling Caisneros, this is Bjorn the Fell-Handed. He was alive with the Emperor.
Yeah, well, that's what he said. He says he fought at the side of the Emperor.
Yeah, and I think he actually liked me. It's a line he used with Caisneros, to which Caisneros just kind of now, I mean, that's a fun little like moment of power flip. I'm going to tell this person what to do. I'm talking to someone who stood next to the Emperor.
Yeah, battle more than once. Hey, man, God, I ate lunch with him.
Yeah. Another really great line in it is Caisneros refers to him as the God Emperor, and Bjorn refers back to God Emperor. That's what got us into this whole mess to begin with. Great yeah. line. Great little line. But before Caisneros can even get his feet back underneath him to try and negotiate with Bjorn, they get another phone call, and it's a bad one. Grimnar's here, and he's in a mood.
Wait a second. Grimnar's here with, yes, Space Wolves.
The entire Space Wolf fleet.
He definitely did the bring everyone.
Yes, the entire Space Wolf fleet has translated the system. And unlike the last time, they didn't come in shields down, guns down. They came in firing and began completely attacking a Inquisition fleet that wasn't even in a defensive formation because they didn't think there was any chance of attack. Their rear was completely unguarded. And this is because as soon as the Inquisition arrived in orbit, obviously the Fangs sent a distress call out to the entirety, and Logan and the rest of the Space Wolves heard it and went, the Fangs in trouble? I'm on my way.
Hold my beer.
Yeah. Oh. The story is kind of cool here. We've covered this before. Traveling through the warp is complicated. It's really taxing on the ship and the navigators. So even though like the further you have to go in the warp, the rougher it is. And you'll pay a cost. Navigators die quite often in warp travel.
Well, this Logan, is pretty badass because Logan yeah. decides to get the Rune Priest together and go, I need to get here now. What can you do about it? Can we cheat this? And the answer is yes. But
all the Rune Priests will die in doing
die,
it.
And, yeah.
And to be fair, the Rune Priests all were like, yeah, okay, no problem. Let's go.
And well, the Fangs under attack.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go. And so that's how they're able to get this. In effect, the Space Wolf fleet does almost an impossible trip. They make what should have been a maybe month-long journey in, I don't know, 12 hours?
Yeah.
Like, they broke a few speed limits is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. What is your ship powered by? Dead people.
Yeah. So Caisneros returns to the bridge of his ship along with Hyperion and Annika just in time for the Space Wolf fleet to basically be on top of them. And Caisneros, again, he is quite clever. He begins coordinating this whole naval engagement, trying to fight back, but it's a futile effort because
you say he's doing a good job of it. He's giving orders as he's getting pummeled.
And also, it's kind of hard to do it because the issue is, like, when you're doing a space battle, most of these, like all naval engagements, you tend to kind of keep some distance, make some range, figure out something. The Space Wolves were on flank speed going straight ahead, running, yeah. basically ramming speed.
Just smashing shit. Yeah. It's fantastic on this because they were just like, nope, and gotta die.
And this scene is awesome because the Space Wolves come in hot and, of course, the Scramassiacs. I apologize, Space Wolf fans. These names are hard. I know you guys love your ships. But anyway, Scramassiacs comes bearing right down in Caisneros' ship. And just before it makes contact, turns to the side a little bit and gives a full broadside into Caisneros' ship. Not to destroy it. Just enough to pull the shields down.
Which is all he wanted in the first place, because Grimnar wanted to go have a chat with Kiznarls. And he's like, well, he teleported on board. And then you've got Grimnar wearing Wolf Terminator armor, which, by the way, is awesome looking because it has all the pelts and all the looks so sweet.
Yeah, Grimnar. Go ahead, Brad. I know how much you love
this. The best is he shows up, and Terminator armor is known to be super slow and plotty. It's invulnerable, but you can barely move on it. Grimnar decides, yeah, those rules don't apply to me. So he starts sprinting in his Terminator armor. Oh, I forgot to mention, he's also like YOLO swagging everything in front of him.
Oh, just slaughtering things.
Yeah.
I do have to pause this for a second, because in the book they do make a really big deal out of him running in Terminator armor and how it's impossible and blah 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 blah. But we do a lore podcast, so I read a lot of stuff. It actually happens all the time. Abaddon ran in Terminator armor all the time in 30K, still does in 40K. The White Scars used to do it. Remember the White Scars? That they were an army at one point in this game. Then the lead character in Dawn of War, there's Dark Angels books where the Deathwing Knights are running. So just pointing it out.
They're not running. The Deathwing Knights, they move at great speed. They talk about killing things.
Oh, they move at great speed. I'm sorry. They're not running.
Come on now.
Sorry.
You will not poo on the wolf.
So are you saying the Deathwing Knights are the masters of power walking in Terminator?
Yes. They're not running. They're power walking.
They're like old people at the mall.
Anyway. With Maces of Absolution.
Exactly.
I should get one of those.
Don't hurt yourself.
He does, however,
back scratcher. We both know that. It's all it would be. Your Mace of Absolution would be my Mace of scratching my back because I can't reach.
I mean, it still sounds awesome for that. It's like a +4 magic item. But
yeah, that works.
So he runs across the bridge doing holy crap things. And then he finds the person that's been giving him a lot of problems. And I can only imagine just the pure anger. It for me, it's got to be the thing of Grimnar starts off with, well, he's not going to do this because this would be ridiculous. All right, well, up it. And he won't do this because this will be ridiculous. And so on and so forth until finally he gets to this and he's like, you got to go, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he cuts Kiznarros' head clean off. Problem, though, is that he wasn't coming there just to cut the head off the snake. He's there to kill the entire snake. So
I was going to say, he's taking the snake and he's beating it on the ground, chopping it up and throwing it into a fire.
So he kills Kiznarros. And at this moment in the novel, as everyone's watching him do this, that's when they realize there's 20 or 30 other Wolfguard also on the bridge.
Wolfguard Terminators are coming. Yeah. This is so ridiculous. You don't see this many Terminators very often.
They begin slaughtering everyone. That is pretty evident at this moment. The Space Wolves are going to make the Grey Knights extinct. That is the purpose of this, along with everyone else, the entire Inquisition fleet. This Grimnar is all in on civil war. And he begins just a wholesale slaughter across this thing, including Hyperion, Mal, Annika. They're barely holding on at this point. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Grimnar was crushing Mal under one of his boots to kill him, when an even bigger flash of light happens and Bjorn has teleported himself onto his ship.
This is a great time in this book because Bjorn shows up and he's not there to continue crushing the Inquisition. He's there to talk old man wisdom to the great wolf. He's just like, wants to tell Grimnar, hey man, we got to dial this back, basically. Yeah. And he does it in a great way. And the thing is that Bjorn's just respected, period, by everyone that knows anything about.
Bjorn is only not the Jarl of the Space Wolves because the downside of being 10,000 years old, he has to sleep for years.
Well, he's in decades. A dreadnought. You'll just go crazy if you're awake all the time in a dreadnought.
But when awake, he is in effect the Jarl. So he comes in there and him and Grimnar start having a chat. And Grimnar is, by the way, having this chat while still crushing Mal under his boot. He's not 100% on team. No, I want to do this. And there's a cute scene where Bjorn refers to Grimnar as being too young. And Grimnar, by the way, is the oldest person around outside of, obviously, Bjorn. But he does. And he does convince Grimnar to the blood rage soothes, the assault stops. But
Bjorn is not done. Yeah, there's a few caveats here. Bjorn calmly looks over at Annika and goes, "Hey, just an FYI, Inquisition, no Fenris, period, off limits. Just letting you know, he says, we'll fire upon it. We'll blow up anything you send here. Yeah, don't send your agents anything.
Any Inquisition vehicle appears anywhere near Fenris, we will destroy it. We're not, you have lost our trust. We will do that every time. The other thing he does, which is super cool, he turns to Hyperion and says, all right, you're coming down to the Fang and you're going to explain to every single space wolf what a Grey Knight is, which is code for you're going to tell the entirety of the space wolves the truth about the galaxy, what chaos is, what it represents, everything. And Hyperion kind of goes, yeah, that seems fair.
Also, yeah, man, like I think I'm gonna agree to whatever Bjorn says, because I feel that Logan is someone makes a loud noise that he doesn't like, just gonna go back into the rage.
It's also you're also standing in between at this point, probably right in between Logan, who's holding an axe, and Bjorn, who is still a venerable dreadnought. Like, you're no, you may not get to the O part of the pronunciation.
He would do the Firefly thing. He tells him, you're going to go explain to everybody. No, smash, pull the next guy. Yeah. You're going to explain.
So while this then satisfies the Space Wolves for now, the war is over, sort of. The Space Wolves also recognize, though, that this is probably just the beginning. The Space Wolves realize that they just went to war with the Imperium and they emerged victorious, but the Inquisition would be back. The Inquisition ironically feel the same way. They don't, yes, Cisneros was weird, but the Space Wolves just went to open war with them. The Space Wolves, they can be storied, they can be all these things, but they just stood against the Inquisition in opposition, and the Space Wolves had no real consequences for it. And that's an affront that could not stand. So what's fun about this, and again, there's no actual proof of what they did, but the Inquisition, they've been working behind the scenes on ways to clip the wings of the Space Wolves, you know, to bring them to heel later. I think they did it by infiltrating Games Workshop and making sure that the Space Wolves got shitty rules the last three editions.
Ah, they had some good rules at certain times.
All right, what's the longest they were good for? 3 months?
I think a lot of things are like that, though, because they Space Wolves typically besides all.
Are you out of your mind?
Space Wolves get really, really good and then get nerfed. Space Wolves get good, get nerfed, but they always get too hard nerfed.
Inquisition. Yeah, they get bad rules, then they get a weird rule shift, then they're really good, and then the Inquisition gets involved and they get really bad again. Is what it is. But the big one, though, is the Grey Knights in this whole thing. The Grey Knights left the ordeal kind of independent. It's a major shift for them. Much like the Inquisition, they realized they can't fully trust the Space Wolves. And while they may have somewhat agreed with things Logan did, but they also did agree in principle with what the Inquisition was doing in Armageddon. They lost. Their problem is they look at the Space Wolves saying the Space Wolves don't seem to understand the real threat that is the archenemy. These guys, it kind of teaches them, maybe all of the Astartes don't fully understand how serious this war we have with the Immaterium is. But at the same time, they also looked at the Inquisition and said, we can't really be that aligned with you guys either. The Inquisition used
because they were using them. And also, exactly. There's not that many of them. They were also using like they typically do, which the Inquisition, to be fair, has effectively unlimited resources.
Yeah.
And the Grey Knights aren't unlimited, and the Grey Knights didn't really want to be used as a throwaway tool.
Yeah, I mean, these are Astartes with the gene seed of the Emperor. They're also really hard to recruit for. These are not easy numbers to make up for, and they lost a ton of people in the War of Armageddon, and more importantly, in the Months of Shame. So they then start shifting themselves to being a bit more of an independent faction. We get a lot more when Drago takes over, but they become their own faction where they're doing, yes, they're still aligned with the Ordo Malleus, but now it's more of a partnership than an arm of the Ordo Malleus. They will take hey, you guys should go here. You guys should help out here. But the Green Hats are going to look at that and say, yes, maybe we will. It's our terms, and we'll do it how we want to do it. That's a big shift that kind of moves stuff into certain directions. I would also argue, and I don't know if it's true, that this War of Armageddon is maybe the shift we see in lore of the citizenry of the Imperium learning more about chaos. It is possible, and again, all right, this is all made up, guys, but still, it is possible that all of these people who survived the war, all these soldiers who then were on random planets telling tales about fighting demons and doing this stuff, this may be why in like current 40K lore, a lot of the citizenry, especially the regiments, are all aware of chaos. My theory, total John theory. But anyway, War of Armageddon, we covered it. Yay. There's still two more. So we'll cover
those. We didn't cover the wars. We covered a war.
Firstly, the first, fourth, whatever number of War of Armageddon this was. But this was good. I liked it a lot. We're going to do more of them in the future, but we haven't covered chaos in a while. And so it's a new year. So let's get after it. I was trying to decide between Night Lords, Iron Warriors, and Head Alpha shaking. Legion. And I'm going to do Alpha Legion.
I am Alpharius.
Alpha Legion are fun. I think this will be a really good one for people. I know we should do Night Lords. My thinking is, I think more people know Night Lord lore. Alpha Legion lore is a lot goofier, a lot more complicated. So
it allows us to do a bunch of stuff is may or may not be canon.
That's why it's fun. I think it's not that stuff may or not be canon. There's a lot of stuff that's canon that may or may not be true. That's what's so fun about them is it's like it's all canon, but then you're like, but it's conflicting, and the answer is yes. They are a very fun Legion to jump into. So no idea if this is gonna be two casts, three casts, whatever it is, because I gotta start writing them. But we're gonna do Alpha Legion. Super excited about it. Really cool paint scheme too, if I'm being honest. But gets excited. But till next time, John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys next week.